Police officers are used to putting other people on the spot, but since the death last summer of an unarmed black man in Ferguson, Missouri, law enforcement has been in the spotlight, trying to justify why it uses deadly force. Police are also trying to explain the difficulty of their job. NPR's Carrie Johnson got a taste of that by going through some police training exercises. And we should say you are about to hear plenty of gunshots.
Gray walls, bland lighting, and piles of white photocopy paper. We're walking through the hall in an office in any town, America.
Do I want to shoot this guy?
Well, he's got a gun to him.
I'm shooting a Glock equipped with a laser, not live ammunition, and thank goodness for that.
Nothing's happening. There's a microwave and a map, some office paper. We're moving slowly down the hall.
Oh, bag of popcorn. Oh.
I just almost shot someone with popcorn. That was not good.
In this scenario, I'm the police officer, trying to figure out who poses a threat and who doesn't. My trainer, Brian Patterson, spent almost 27 years with the police department in Fairfax County, Virginia. On this day, he's trying to teach me how hard it is to be a cop. It's part of a program run by the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund. The group raises money to defend police officers accused of misconduct. Ron Hosko is its president.
When I saw some of the coverage about Ferguson, I was astonished by the lack of understanding by people in the media about the realities of being a police officer.
Police often have just seconds to make decisions that can mean life or death. And Hosko says court precedent leans toward giving law enforcement the benefit of the doubt, even in close calls.
There is an expectation that a police officer act reasonably, not that they have to be right.
In the court of public opinion, though, law enforcement has been on the defensive. That's how I wound up in the basement of a red brick office complex in Northern Virginia, a canister of inactive pepper spray strapped to my waist, my right hand wrapped around that pistol.
In order to get that pistol out of the holster, you're going to have to press in and pull up. There you go. Put it back in. You'll hear it click. That's what we call a level one holster.
Patterson presses play on the electronic simulator. It's on to the next call, a domestic dispute, something that can confound even the most experienced cop. We see a woman with long, dark hair standing at her kitchen window next to the sink.
Where is he? Where is he?
A man emerges from the hallway. He looks punchy, and he's got a drink in his hand.
Put your hands up, sir. Sir, put your hands up. Put the beer down and put your hands up. Sir, in this way, ma'am.
Nobody listens. He starts cussing. She moves closer to the sink.
Ma'am, sir! Sir! She just shot him.
In just over 2 seconds, the woman has reached into the sink, pulled out a weapon, and fired 3 rounds into the man. My trainer, Brian Patterson, demands an explanation from me.
She was shooting him. He's laying on the floor. She shot him 3 times. Is there like some sort of female allegiance? If it had been a guy, I bet you shot him. But you didn't shoot the girl. Why is that?
Well, it's hard to figure out what's about to happen in fractions of a minute. And there's this, something researchers call implicit bias. I'm a tiny woman raised by my mom and grandmother. To me, women represent a source of comfort and inspiration, not threats. But Patterson says adopting that attitude in a domestic violence situation means someone could get hurt.
We treat everybody like kings and queens. We treat them with the utmost respect and dignity. But we also know that at any point in time, I might have to use force against this person.
Policing experts say most officers who come under scrutiny for using deadly force are justified under the laws on the books today. Tracy Mears teaches at Yale Law School.
I think many officers right now are acting consistent with the training. They aren't doing anything wrong according to law or the training. I think we need to reassess the policy and then retrain in a way that values everyone's life.
Mears served on the president's task force on 21st century policing. That task force recommended looking at an entire police interaction from the start.
If you look at the end of any interaction, one can say in the last 5 seconds that deadly force is appropriate. But when you step back and you rewind the tape, you can see many opportunities that an officer has not to take that path.
Meir says agencies have to figure out a way to better analyze what police do through formal after-action reviews, just as doctors review their failings when patients die. Patterson, my trainer, says he still hashes over incidents from his long career.
For a police officer, I can tell you a lot of times we go back and we wonder, what could we have done different? What should we have done?
These days, those conversations are happening out in the open all over the country, not just in police stations. Carrie Johnson, NPR News.